Don't worry, you're in the right place. Resilient Faith Online is now Amplify Your Authority. I'm Marissa Shadrick, and I'll continue to bring you a wonderful blend of powerful marketing strategies with a touch of personal growth insights for business success. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode. Welcome. I'm Marissa Shadrick, host of the Resilient Faith Online Show. I'm an online marketing coach and certified copywriter. And in this podcast, you'll find a different perspective on the external and internal challenges we face as online entrepreneurs. Join me for some inspiration and practical tips as we create positive change in the world. To continue the conversation, join me in my private Resilient Creator community. Go to marissashedrick.com/community. Hello, everyone. How are you doing? Marissa Shadrick here, and I've got a very special guest with me today, and I want to tell you just a little bit about him. He's going to share a little bit more, but I have Steve Ryder with me today, and Steve Ryder is a 25-year internationally syndicated broadcasting professional. He spent 12-plus years working on the internationally syndicated radio show Focus on the Family, overseeing the production team when Focus on the Family launched into the National Radio Hall of Fame, beating out Howard Stern, Bob Costas, and Dr. Laura. He also helped spearhead what ended up being the largest rollout in radio history at Dr. Dobson's Family Talk, where he was the second employee Dr. Dobson hired. So let me welcome Steve Ryder. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
I love you so much. Thank you so much.
It's so great to have you. It's great. It was nice that Steve and I met at a conference.
In Nashville.
And I heard just a little bit about his story, and I thought it would be great to bring him on the podcast. And I think everyone will be able to relate to parts of the story and also find encouragement and realize that we're not alone in this entrepreneurial journey when we're trying to navigate life and work. It can be complicated at times. So, Steve, for those people that don't know you very well, do you want to add a little bit about your background, some of the things that you've done in the past, just to give them a little bit more context?
Yeah, I'm fortunate in that during a crisis, I guess, in college, I was trying to get into the sports medicine department at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. And because a few weeks before I got to school, they sent me a letter saying, you don't have a dorm. I had to find an apartment and then start working to pay for that apartment. So I wasn't able to volunteer in the sports medicine department like I needed to in order to get in. And when they gave me that rejection letter, right during finals week, I got walking pneumonia and I was just burned out with school. And so I took some time off. And it was during that time that I remembered some instances of my life, like being in fourth grade. My uncle bought my brothers and I a Fisher-Price cassette recorder, and I used to make radio shows with my friends. and a funny thing is, a friend of mine I've known my entire life, and I mean my entire life, I mean I'm 2 weeks older than him, and his aunt used to babysit us when we were infants. So I've known Phil my entire life, and I was at his sign shop in downtown Chicago. He hand paints signs. It's one of the few hand painting sign makers in the Chicago area for grocery stores and that kind of stuff. And we were hanging out at his shop, and he was like, hey, do you remember when – I think it's funny you're in radio because do you remember when we were kids and we used to make radio shows in your backyard? Sixth grade, I hosted a kids' news segment at a local radio station, and then my senior year of high school – we were working on a radio spot for the morning announcements as kind of a project for one of my classes. And someone I knew since the first grade, she looked at me. She said, Steve, I've never seen you smile like this before.
Wow.
And I remembered those three instances. I was like, radio, recording. Yeah. I think that might be a good move for me. Yeah. And so I went and I focused on the studio recording part in school. And then I interned at a local radio station. So that way I'd get both. That way I'd be able to have the expertise to get into a studio environment if I wanted to move into post-production or I wanted to move into a recording studio or something like that. I had dreams of going to Nashville or to New York or LA, or my dream was Skywalker Sound. I was a Star Wars nerd growing up, and so to work for Skywalker Sound, the preeminent sound design studio in the world, was like, that's where I wanted to go. And I was dating a girl my last year of school, and her parents lived here in Colorado Springs. And I came out to meet the parents and fell in love with the town. And they were like, focus on the families here. And I was like, focus on the family, focus on the family. Dr. Dobson. I remember Dr. Dobson. My mom listened to Dr. Dobson all the time when she would make dinner, when she dragged my ass to church, and those kinds of things. And so, and Doc also had like a bulletin thing in the little column in the church bulletin. And so I'd read that because my pastor was painfully boring growing up. So I always had great respect for Doc. And it was me just putting my foot in the door.
Yeah.
Out that's here great. that got me going.
That's great that you knew early on that that's what you wanted to do. That doesn't happen to everyone.
No.
Plus, it doesn't hurt that you have a radio voice either.
I was on the production side. I was rarely in front of the microphone.
But occasionally, you did do podcasting later.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I do some occasional character voices for some image spots, or a Doc had me on the broadcast a couple of times to talk about some of the stuff that we had done, but
yeah. I remember Dr. Dobson. I listened to him because radio was big. I mean,
it was king.
It was. And I remember he came on early in the morning and I was glued to him. Yeah.
So the story of Focus on the Family is Doc had written his book, Dare to Discipline. He was working at USC School of Medicine and Children's Hospital, Los Angeles. And as a child psychologist, and he would go and do these conferences and speak. And his dad basically cornered him and said, you're traveling so much and you're working so much. I fear you're going to lose your family. Mm. And you need to think about a way to get your message out to more people. And Doc had two opportunities. He had TV and he had radio, and everyone around him that was praying for him, And Doc as well, felt like radio was it for some reason, even though TV was more glamorous, even though it was, you know, kind of a bigger production. It really worked out well because Doc has such a unique voice. Mm-hmm. There was one time we were at a restaurant in Nashville, Tennessee. We had just got done recording. We sat down and the lunch crowd had left and this couple heard his voice. A few tables away, his back was turned so they couldn't see his face. Yes. And they immediately got up and started weeping about how Focus had impacted their life. And they had a special needs child and the resources that we had sent them and this and that. And it was something that, being in my position as the chief audio engineer, it gave me a special access to Doc that very few people around the ministry had. And because I would travel with him often when we would do recordings, and then we'd, you know, go to lunch and go to dinner and those kinds of things. I got to see the man, and he's an amazing human being.
He's
an amazing human being. And people would ask me, you know, is Doc the same off mic as he is on mic? And he is. I mean, my favorite story I love to tell, super quick. We were in Palm Desert, California. We just got done recording for the day. He has a small 2-bedroom condo in Palm Desert. So we were out there recording because he was out there relaxing. And we were at a Mexican restaurant, and then we were going to go get frozen yogurt afterwards. And John Fuller, the VP of broadcasting, and I walked out. We had our car, and Doc and Shirley had their car. Shirley said she wanted to say hi to someone, so I peeled off to go to the restroom and then meet John at the car. And when I walked out, Doc and Shirley were about 10, 15 yards in front of me, and they were holding hands.
Aww.
Here's a couple that have been married 48 years. 47, 48 years at the time. And I saw the way in which they loved each other. I saw the way that Doc would stop everything for a call for one of his kids or Shirley.
That's interesting. Because even early on, you said it was his dad. He says, you know, if you keep doing this, you know, what's going to happen to your family? There's that tension of work and your personal life.
Yes.
And it worked out so well for him to be able to do that and get his message out.
And he never took a salary from Focus.
Wow.
He was a volunteer. Never took a salary from Focus. All his money was made from his books and his speaking.
Wow.
And he made a really good income doing that. And so, yeah, it's something that he's in my opinion, probably the most important and influential evangelical leader of the last 35 years, 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
Because as Billy Graham started to wind down his ministry and Jerry Falwell kind of started to wind down a little bit, Doc just came in and became the evangelical pope, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't his wife Shirley also lead like
National Day of Prayer?
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
NDP.
I thought so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were a powerful couple. And I still remember Dr. Dobson because my kids were little and I was glued because he had so much wisdom. And I just wanted to raise them right. And I didn't know anything about parenting. I didn't have family nearby. And so I would never miss it. I would never miss it. I'd have that radio on at 5 a.m. It's awesome. So how did things evolve for you?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Many coaches, consultants, service providers, and even course creators understand the power of having an email list. It is your greatest asset. However, lead magnets have not been converting like they used to. The market has changed. Hi, I'm Marissa Shadrick, online marketing consultant, certified brand and certified copywriter. I've got a brand new membership program, and it's called Amplify Your Message. This private membership is exclusively to help you with your lead acquisition, your lead magnets. It's so affordable. Anyone can be a part of this. Only $29 a month, and I show up for coaching calls. We brainstorm ideas. I give copy critiques. I help you improve your lead acquisition process. You can get all the information at marissashadrick.com/community. I'll see you there. Take care.
Yeah, so I just started working my way up through the ranks at Focus. And the point at which I decided I wanted to stay. Mm-hmm. Because 6 weeks after I moved here, the girl that I moved out here for met another guy back at school and dumped me. And so this is the last place in the world I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the king of Christian radio, but I mean, let's be honest. Christian radio and then, you know, terrestrial radio, general market radio, they're two completely different levels. Yeah. And while Focus was on par with anything that was out there in terms of general market radio, I wanted to go to Skywalker. I wanted to go to Los Angeles. I wanted to go to Nashville or New York and work at a post-production house and work on TV shows and get more into sound design and sound engineering and Foley and that kind of stuff. But every time I would try and move in that direction, those doors closed. And it got to a crisis point where my VP at Focus and I were starting to have some tension. The VP of broadcasting, Mike Trout, who's since become a really, really dear mentor and friend. Mm-hmm. But his last couple of years at Focus, I felt like I was in his crosshairs. I could do nothing right. And so I was going to even move back to Wisconsin, but even those doors kept closing. And so the point at which I decided when those doors kept closing, I was praying about it. And I really felt like God said, I got you here for a reason. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to bust my tail and I'm going to outwork everyone. And I started leapfrogging guys at Focus left and right. And I beat out a guy that had, I think, 12 years seniority over me to manage the production team for the daily broadcast. Then he left and that opened up the chief audio engineer position. And so I moved into that as well. And that's when things really just took off. I mean, we were inducted in the Radio Hall of Fame in 2008, as you said. And things were just, it was incredible. It was an incredible run. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful for that foundation. And foundation not only of the commitment to excellence that was modeled for me and I tried to match or even exceed that, but also just the incredible men and women that were in the broadcasting division that mentored me, that discipled me, that took me under their wing and had me come over for Thanksgiving when I wasn't going back for Thanksgiving, or come over for Christmas when I wasn't going back to Wisconsin for Christmas, and just included me. And yeah, I
what a wonderful experience.
It was.
It impacted your life in such a way, a lasting impact in a positive way.
I got a PhD in family and child rearing and marriage just from listening to the broadcast every single day.
Yeah,
I really did. I mean, we would be around these incredible thinkers, and also during the time that, you know, the workload was a little bit lower, we'd sit in each other's offices and talk theology. Okay. Because I worked with every denomination under the sun, and yeah. I'd sit in an office. I'd be like, okay, tell me what you believe about this. Yeah. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but you just challenged me, and I know you and I love you. And so you've given me something really to think about. And it really showed me just the vastness of the kingdom of God and how all of us just bring a whole different flavor into this big stew that God's preparing.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think all of us in a small way have an opportunity online, not at all. It's an opportunity to plant seeds, you know, in whatever it is that we do, entrepreneurs that maybe do live streams, or they do a podcast, in just the way they conduct themselves, in just their perspectives. I think it could be a positive influence all across the world, because you never know who's going to listen to it. We have this opportunity of the internet, and people think, well, you're so idealistic. I said, but it's the internet. You know, we have a responsibility, and if we can bring a healthy perspective, then why not? You know, and all of us, if everyone did that, you know, we would be depositing these wonderful seeds that you never know what could happen. So maybe it's idealistic, but I think it's an opportunity for all of us that are entrepreneurs and we're using the internet to live stream or do podcasts or whatever it might be.
I agree. Yeah.
So you were still single then, because they were like bringing you over Thanksgiving and then Christmas. Yeah. And so how did you end up getting married?
Yeah. So in 2000, Focus lent me to Billy Graham to help help record the Amsterdam 2000 conference. And I spent a month in Amsterdam and then took some extra time. I think it was about a week and a half off and toured around Italy. And when I came back, I had just done some counseling at Focus through some of the counselors, and I was feeling really comfortable with who I was, where I was in life, where I was going. And when I got back, I saw this ad in my Yahoo email, one of those little banner ads for a dating site. And I was like, what the heck? I'm feeling really good right now. Let's just give this a try. And there was one in particular that no picture. All it said was Christian girl looking to hang out with a Christian guy. And I was like, well, chances are it's not going to turn out to be anything, but who knows? So we had a couple conversations, a couple email back and forth. And then we had a phone conversation. And then she sent me a picture. And I was smitten, to say the least. Yeah. The amazing thing is I almost ended it after our third date. I almost
really?
Did. I went over to a friend's house, a former colleague of mine at Focus, who was a morning TV anchor now in Denver. Now he's in Philly, working in Philly. But I spent the night at his place after one of those dates, because Elizabeth and I had plans the next day to go to church with her grandma, go out to lunch with her grandma, and then for us to go back to her place and just... She was a big baseball fan, and so playoff baseball was going on, so we were going to watch some baseball and some football. And I told Tommy, I was like, Tommy, I'm not feeling any real chemistry. He looked at me, he was like, dude, it's 10:30 at night. You're not going to cancel the next morning at 10:30 at night. Don't be a chump. That's a chump move.
Yeah.
All right. Just go to church. Then lunch. And if you're still not feeling it, just end it right there. All right. Well, needless to say, while we were on her couch, watch, I remember Roger Clemens was pitching for the Yankees against the Mariners. And we were talking, we hit this level, and the thought hit me, this is the girl I'm going to marry.
Wow.
This is the girl I'm going to marry. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Less than 24 hours.
Amazing.
And so, yeah. And so, yeah, within a year and 3 days from our first date, we were married.
Amazing.
And she was the most incredibly, she was the most emotionally intelligent human being that I've ever met. And,
So how did you juggle work? And then after you got married with her, were you like heeding Dr. Dobson's words? Like, was that coming back to you? Like, how do you do that so that you manage that? Cause that's a big sticky.
Yes. Yes. And no. Yes. When I was present, I was trying to be present because quality time was her number one love language.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, though, I was also coaching high school football at the time, which is almost another full-time job.
Yeah.
And so I was getting this desire filled for influencing these young men and being back in competitive sports and also working full-time. And so, yeah, it was something that I don't regret. But at the same time, though, I think I probably would have done it differently. I don't think I would have coached building a house, buying a house, getting married all within, you know, within a year's time.
We learn, right? It'd be great if we had all the wisdom ahead of time. But the good thing is as we learn when we course correct, I mean, that's what we all do. And if we're all trying to do that and honor the other person as best as we can and course correct, we're not always going to start doing it perfectly, but we can always adjust things.
She ended up being a real supporter of coaching because she really started to get involved with the other coaches' wives and being involved in the program in that way. And so I coached 3 years and then got her pregnant. And I was like, all right, I'm done. She's going to need me a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm done. And my head coach was like, hey, listen, she's not due to give birth until after the season. If you want, I can leave a position open for you. And I was like, no, don't worry about it. Well, about a month or two later, he reached back out and he was like, I wasn't able to fill it. And Elizabeth apparently started chirping on me too. Hey, you really should consider finishing this one out because you saw those kids come in as freshmen. You really should see them go out as seniors. I think this could be a really special year for you guys. And I was like, are you sure? Are you really sure? And she was 100% behind it. And it was the most successful season in the school's history. The school had never been a winner. We busted our tails to try and turn them around to a winner. And we started to really establish that foundation that the school needed to where 3 years after we had left, they played in the state championship game because of a lot of those kids that we had developed from elementary school, junior high, by establishing those younger programs. But it was an incredible year. And, I'm so grateful that she was such a supporter of it those last couple years.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how many kids do you have?
We have two boys. We have two boys. Matthew is 18 and then Caleb is 16. And with Matthew, so when she found out she was pregnant, she was also diagnosed with lupus. And her rheumatologist said, this kind of lupus is going to be really dangerous for you because you have this anti-cardiophospholipid antibody. And it's going to be a significant health risk being pregnant. You're going to have pregnancy-induced hypertension. You're at significant significant risk for preeclampsia, those kinds of issues. And so I recommend an abortion, is what he said. Elizabeth was like, nope, not going to listen to you. And so sure enough, that's the way it played out. I had to give her blood thinner shots on a daily basis. She was on bed rest a bunch. and numerous ER visits with crazy high blood pressure. And on late October during the season, she ended up being hospitalized. They ended up hospitalizing her because the blood pressure was just too crazy. They really wanted to get that managed. Mm-hmm. And on October 30th, as she was kind of starting to wind down and get ready to come back home, she started bleeding. Nurse came in and looked for the Matthew's heartbeat and couldn't find it, and then realized, oh, the bleeding plus his heart rate has slowed down to the same as Elizabeth's. The placenta's abrupting. We need to do an emergency C-section.
Right.
And wow. When she went in, it was so fast they didn't have time for me to scrub in. So I watched from the scrub-in area, then pull Matthew out, and then went mm-hmm. with Matthew. And my head coach's wife, Tracy, who was one of Elizabeth's closest friends, mm-hmm. She went with Elizabeth and was there with Elizabeth when she woke. Mm-hmm. And when Elizabeth woke, the first thing that she said was, I'm not supposed to be here.
Mm.
The doctor came to me and said, right before I had found out that she had said this, he came to me. It got really hairy in there. She lost a lot of blood. We got her stable now. Everything's good. And so that planted in me that this could be my journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime I would work on a broadcast that talked about, you know, grief or losing a spouse, there was something in my spirit that would just perk up and say, pay attention. You need to pay attention to this.
Yeah. Yeah. And how was the baby after all of that?
Matthew was 9 weeks early, 3 pounds, 10 ounces in the NICU for a good 5 weeks. I think he was in the NICU for 5 weeks and came home with oxygen. You wouldn't tell it from looking at him now.
I bet.
He's almost 6'4". He's a couple inches taller than me. He's just a strong, strapping kid.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then we weren't going to have any more kids. And so she was on the pill while I saved up for a vasectomy and slipped one past the goalie. And she got pregnant.
You didn't
got
her save pregnant. Up fast enough, yeah, but I bet you're glad yeah, you didn't.
Without question, because Elizabeth and I joked all the time, our lives would be so boring without Caleb. Mm-hmm. He's our blue-eyed, curly-haired little hippie kid who loves everyone and makes friends everywhere he goes and always has something ridiculous to say and just brings so much joy into the world that, I could not imagine.
Which one of the boys has more like your personality?
Matthew, definitely. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Each of them have bits of me, but I think mm-hmm. Matthew and I totally get each other. We speak each other's language. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's really a good thing because Matthew and I rarely had any conflict. Matthew and I rarely had any tension between us. Caleb and I were the ones that would butt heads
mm-hmm.
because of this free spirit and, you know, mm-hmm. just hippie kind of let life just kind of happen. And, oh, I didn't get to it. Oh, well, I'll get to it when I get to it. Kind of.
Yeah. Kind of free spirit.
Exactly. He really is.
And no real urgency.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. The way our kids are so different in personality, right? We just kind of scratch our head. But yeah, unique in their own way, you know? And my daughter's kind of like that. But when something does need to get done, it does get done. It's just the journey to it. You just wonder if it's going to happen, right? So anyway, so tell me a little bit more, because your story kind of took a turn that you were not expecting.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in 2014, actually 2013, Elizabeth started to deal with what was ultimately a lupus flare-up. The doctors were misdiagnosing it because all the blood markers showed the lupus was in remission. So they thought it was hormonal. They thought it was this. They thought it was that. They weren't quite sure what it was. And she started to lose her appetite and started to waste away. And she ended up wasting away and ended up being bedridden for a while. Ended up, when she went to the hospital in February of 2014, she was 86 pounds, skin and bones. And the doctors, we ended up going to the best hospital. We got tired of dealing with here in Colorado Springs. And we just went to the best hospital in the state at the University of Colorado Hospital. And, they were like, yeah, even though the lupus looks like it's in remission, we're just going to treat it like lupus and just see what happens. And within 6 hours, she was getting up by herself, going to the bathroom by herself. And even within a couple of days, was able to put on her own socks, which is something she hadn't been able to do in a while, in months, really. But she got better from that so quickly that some undiagnosed pulmonary hypertension raged. So going back to Matthew's birth and that transfusion and this emergency C-section, literally within a day or two, she started complaining of chest pain. And the doctors always said, that's just the lupus, that's just the lupus, that's just the lupus. And they did a scan one time and saw that her pericardial sac, the sac around her heart, was inflamed. And so they said, that's what's causing it, nothing else. Well, her heart went from perfect in March of 2014 to significantly enlarged and failing congestively in November of 2014. And when she ended up being hospitalized back at UCH, the doctors came to me and said, Steve, this is an end of life kind of situation, meaning that the heart failure is so bad she may not make it out. And when she was officially diagnosed with that pulmonary hypertension, the head of pulmonology came to me and he said, Steve, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but there's a real possibility your wife's not going to be around to see your youngest graduate high school. Caleb was 8 at the time. So he's basically saying in the next 10 years, she could be gone. Because, one, she had a Hickman line now going into her chest that was pumping in meds 24/7. And two, the meds eventually stop working. The best medicines that they have, eventually they stop working. And for those that don't know about what pulmonary hypertension is, basically your lungs aren't absorbing the amount of blood that the heart is trying to push in to oxygenate the blood. And so that back pressure causes the right side of your heart to enlarge and eventually it just fails. And so what the meds were doing is they were opening up those blood vessels in her lungs to allow them to allow the normal amount of blood flow to go through. And so I made it my mission to really dig into not only my health as I was recovering from, as I had recovered from my burnout when I left Focus and our Family Talk in 2012, but now it was also listening to these cutting edge health podcasts and biohacker podcasts, just in case I could hear some kind of breakthrough in autoimmune, pulmonary hypertension, those kinds of things. Because I later watched a documentary called How to Survive a Plague. And it was on Amazon Prime at the time. It's currently on HBO Max. And it's all about the AIDS epidemic in the 80s and what was going on in the gay community. And it had lots of home video footage of these town halls and the protests that for trying to get more funding into AIDS research and what was all going on during that time. And you would watch these leaders die 87, 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. And it was 93, 94, 95, somewhere around there that big breakthrough, that magic cocktail of drugs was settled on to try and treat it. And all of a sudden they cut to modern times and all these leaders, some of them who were on their deathbeds in the early 90s, were around today. And I knew it was just a matter of keeping Elizabeth healthy long enough to be able to catch that breakthrough for us to be able to see a full and productive life out of her. And so that was my goal. And when COVID happened, we knew because she had a lung condition that COVID could be really serious for her. And so we locked down hard where friends were delivering groceries and dropping stuff off. And I was rarely leaving the house. And if I was making sure I was masked at the grocery store and trying to go during a time where there were minimal people around, avoiding people, doing my very best to try and make sure that I wasn't bringing COVID home. but she thought she had COVID right at the very beginning. A friend of hers was exhibiting COVID symptoms. Elizabeth started exhibiting COVID symptoms, and her husband, or her friend's husband, worked for the Department of Defense, did a ton of traveling. And so it kind of made sense that he might've got it, given it to Marissa, who then gave it to Elizabeth. And so she got tested. It was negative, but because there were so many false negatives and there was so much unknown about COVID in March of 2020, that they still thought it was COVID. So they were treating her virtually. And unfortunately, you can't diagnose pneumonia or a blood infection over a virtual visit.
Yeah.
And so on April 29th, she woke up at about 3 a.m, throwing up, not even able to keep a sip of Gatorade down. Mm-hmm. And after about 2.5 hours of that, we knew it was time for her, that she had to go to the hospital. And she would have gone to the hospital sooner had they been allowing visitors in. She didn't want to be alone.
Yeah.
She didn't want to be isolated like that. And so she waited until it was probably too late. Mm-hmm. If she had gone in earlier, they would have been able to treat it much more efficiently and she would have come home probably. But because she went in so late, the recovery was a lot slower and a lot longer. And on Mother's Day weekend, I was working really hard to try and get into the hospital by getting some media attention around the state about people dying alone, about people being forced to recover alone in the hospital.
Right.
And so my mom was coming out to help with the boys so that way I could focus even more on that fight to try and get into the hospital and raise awareness about people dying alone. And we were driving right by the hospital and I thought, what's the least harmful thing I could do? Do I drive by and drive back out to Denver International Airport and back and not acknowledge? She knows I'm going to be driving right by it. Or do I take the boys up and go up a couple hours early and grab Euros from our favorite Euro place and sit outside the hospital and FaceTime over dinner and then wave to her from the car? And we did that. And at the end of the call, she got super emotional. And every time she got emotional, her health would dip. And that night at about 2 a.m, I got a call. Your wife is bleeding in one of her lungs. We're moving her into the ICU. Don't come up. Got a call a couple hours later. We think we've isolated it. It's a couple small arteries. We're cauterizing them. We've given her coagulants. Don't come up. We had a call on Mother's Day. We talked on Saturday, obviously, but then on Sunday we had a call and she was someone that never got depressed, but this day she was depressed, really depressed about being in the hospital alone on Mother's Day. And I dipped into my bag of tricks of almost 20 years with her of stuff to try and get her to smile. And it never worked. And our conversation turned to, what if this is the one you don't come home from?
How frustrating to not be there.
That's not the place that you should have those kinds of conversations, Marissa. It's not.
No.
It should be in person. I mean, we know, we all know, intuitively know, and the studies bear it out. That study after study shows that having a loved one there aids in the healing process. And conversely, loneliness and isolation increase mortality. One study said that the most lonely and isolated elderly patients are 2.5 times more likely to die prematurely than their most socially connected peers.
Right.
And another study said that women going through breast cancer treatment that have someone there to go through it with them. And those that didn't were 5 times more likely to die prematurely.
Yeah, you can't strip away emotional support. You just can't. And especially from loved ones. It's, you know, I have not experienced something to that degree, but I know when we moved to California last summer, my husband was, you know, U-Haul, unpacking everything. He wasn't feeling very well, but he had to go to Costco and he went with my granddaughter and he dropped to the floor. And my granddaughter, as soon as she said, "Pop, are you okay?" he was up again. And he goes, "Oh, maybe I just didn't drink enough water." Well, that day we went to a restaurant and he said, "You know, I'm still not feeling very good." I said, "Let me see your," because I got him one of those watches that says everything. And so I looked and I go, "Your heart rate, it's like non-existent." He goes, "I think it's broken, my watch." And I said, "Here, put my Fitbit on." And I'm going, "You're going to the hospital." And his heart rate was so low, it was about ready to stop. I mean, I don't know how he was even walking. And they didn't even wait to do all of the intake stuff. They just immediately took him in and they had me, you know, fill out all the forms and everything. And he needed a pacemaker. And, unfortunately I couldn't go in the hospital. And that was a surprise to me because in Nevada, you could, if somebody was in the hospital, you can go in. And they would not let me in. And they said, no, you need to get a COVID test. And I said, okay, where do I go? Is there a place here? And he goes, no, there's a few of them. And of course it was closed. I had to go to the next day, try to find where this was. It was in some garage structure, this little kiosk, and it was only good for one day. And you would only be allowed to visit for 1 hour. And so, but I remember that first night when I couldn't get in there. I mean, I was FaceTiming and I was in tears. I was just in tears because I didn't know what was going on, right? Yeah. I didn't know yet what was going on. And that was just a small taste, you know? And I just remember trembling and crying hysterically because I wanted to be in there with him. And I just can't even imagine being forced to be separated like that. It's just wrong.
The problem, I mean, the problem that I have seen from hospitals when they started letting visitors in the spring of 2020, they would allow one visitor for 1 hour. And I have a friend whose elderly aunt was up in the hospital in Greeley, and her cousin, the daughter, is a nurse. Mm-hmm. And she would go in for her 1 hour, and she'd be like, my mom's starting to develop bed sores. She's dehydrated, this, that, and the other. She would go back in the next day. The bed sores are getting worse. She's still dehydrated, this, that, and the other. Not enough can be done during that 1 hour that people are, that they would be let in. And we were expecting way too much. The nurses were being asked to provide more emotional support and more, you know, be a little bit more watchful. And when you're overworked, overstressed,
exactly,
you don't have that capacity.
No,
you don't have that emotional capacity. And then you tack on the emotional trauma, and it is trauma.
It is.
Of a nurse holding up an iPad while someone was dying. I have heard from so many nurses that have left the hospital environment because they were so traumatized from holding up an iPad while someone was dying. It's something that it's wrong. It's morally wrong. And I've never asked, never once have I ever asked for hospitals to open up and let it be business as normal, business as usual when it comes to visitation in the middle of the COVID pandemic or in the middle of whatever. The next disease du jour that the media likes to promote, and it's going to be the thing that destroys civilization. They made it sound like SARS was going to do that. They made it sound like MERS was going to do that, or swine flu, or bird flu, or Ebola.
Try to instigate fear immediately, you know.
All I've ever asked for is one screened loved one advocate caregiver per day with no time limits, or at the very least reasonable time limits, in that if visiting hours from 8 to 8, I could get there at 8 and I got to leave at 8. In reality, I think if I'm there in the hospital for 12 hours, I should be allowed to sleep there like I used to when Elizabeth was in for the 5 weeks between the two hospital stays in 2014.
Right.
I'd be in there 2 or 3 days. Her mom would be in there 1 or 2. And we'd do this rotation, and we'd bring friends over, and we'd bring the boys in, and we'd just shower her with love and cast a vision for our future and rub her feet and rub her shoulders and let her know that we were expecting her to come home and give her that encouragement that she needed to keep her spirits up. And unfortunately, that didn't happen this time. And the last week and a half of my wife's life, the last week and a half, she complained of lower back pain. And I kept telling her, babe, as soon as I get in there, I'm going to rub your lower back. I'm going to bring my massage gun. I'm going to take care of you. I'll bring some, you know, some Biofreeze or whatever kind of Bengay, whatever kind of ointment to kind of help loosen those muscles up. I'm going to take care of you. Marissa, the autopsy showed that it was undiagnosed kidney stones.
Oh, no.
If I had been in there, I would have been able to rub her back and say, hey, listen, you know, it's not getting better. What could this be? And during that time, they may have been addressed and the pain may have been gone because the kidney stones would have been addressed. But it wasn't, because you were asking an overworked, overstaffed, understaffed, and overworked and overstressed staff to do things that they normally didn't do.
Right. Right. So, yeah. And I think loved ones too. I mean, when someone's sick, they need an advocate. They need someone that knows them, that knows their history, because they see immediately the things that need to be taken care of, the physicians, and they're taking care of them that way. But you know the history, you know what's gone on in the past. So they need an advocate. And I know when I took care of my dad when he had dementia, I was there a lot with him because he needed an advocate. I knew everything about him and things that the chart won't necessarily show that would even make it easier for the nurses as well. So, so yeah, I totally get that. So this was indeed trauma. And I'm so sorry that you went through all of this in your family. What has come out of all of this? What have you learned? Yeah. What has come from this?
So what's come from this is I created a nonprofit called the Never Alone Project. The goal of the Never Alone Project is to ultimately see legislative change by mobilizing a community to raise awareness about this issue. Mm-hmm. We ultimately want to see a patient's right to one. That's all I'm asking for. One screened loved one advocate caregiver. Mm-hmm. And we've got some legislation now here in Colorado. We have legislation in a number of states. Unfortunately, even in the state that has the best legislation in Arkansas, hospitals are still locking people out. At least the last time I talked to Representative Julie Mayberry, who ran that legislation, because people don't know about it. And so because they don't know about it, they don't know that they have this right. And once they, and often if they do know, they're afraid to push back because they're afraid their quality of care is going to be impacted. They're afraid that, you know, the staff will get resentful and take less better care of their loved one. And so there needs to be a federal legislation that protects a patient's right to one screened loved one per day.
Absolutely. That's great. That's awesome. So, how can our listeners, is there a way that they can help or learn more about this?
Yeah. So you can learn more by going to neveraloneproject.org. Okay. Neveraloneproject.org. And Marissa, this is a crazy God story that you're going to love. So when I first set it up, neveraloneproject.org, someone was squatting on it. And I'm like, right now, I don't want to spend the money to get it. And so I got neveralonepandemic.org. And that was the website for a long time. And we're in the process of starting to get that moved over to the new URL. But I was on a call with our mutual friend, Mike Kim, a few weeks ago. And we were talking about, he was looking over and giving me some tips about the websites. And he's helping me redesign the Never Alone website. And he was like, is neveraloneproject.org available? He's like, pandemic's fine, but really you should try and get Neverland Project if that's available. And I said, yeah, someone's squatting on it. They want $1,500, but I've got other things I need to spend money on before I go splurge on that. And he was like, all right, I'm going to front the money. You buy it today and I'm going to raise it from the rest of our mastermind. And I was like, oh. He's like, everybody will pitch in like $125. We'll cover it. We'll cover it for you. You get that today. Okay. So that's the email. I find the email. I click on it to the purchase and it's not available. And my heart sank. I was like, oh no, someone else has it. Now they want $10,000 versus $1,000 to $1,500, or another organization called the Never Alone Project just got a hold of it. And so I'm completely out of luck and my heart sank. So I went to whois.com to see who owned it, see who was registered to, and it was available.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? So immediately I go and I put that in my Google Domains cart. And in that part where they upsell you, do you want .net? Do you want .us and .biz and .whatever, .consulting and .media? Netflix.com was available too. NeverAloneProject.com was available as
well. Oh my goodness.
I posted that on LinkedIn. And I have friends that they buy domains for their marketers, and they buy domains on a regular basis. And they said, Steve, this never happens.
No.
Never happens. And so clearly there's like, God's got some kind of wind behind this now, because I, honestly, up until this point, I haven't been able to really devote a whole lot of time to it. Mm-hmm. I'm in the process right now of working with my staff, with my audio production business. Mike McCullowitz wrote a book called Clockwork. It's about systematizing your business and handing more stuff off so you can take 4 weeks off, never check email once, and the business still goes on and works just fine. So I've been starting to work with that on my staff. And then I had a conversation with my longest running client, Dr. Julie Slattery. I used to work with her at Focus. She has a ministry called Authentic Intimacy and a great podcast called Java with Julie. You'd love Julie. You'd love Julie. She's an amazing human being, a rock star.
Oh.
Rock star in the making. And I had a conversation with Julie, and I was kind of explaining that, hey, every time I tell the story, it knocks me sideways. Sometimes it knocks me out for brain fog and just irritable, emotional. Sometimes, at least at first, it was like for a week afterwards. And she was like, Steve, you did the grief counseling. That was amazing. But you have trauma. You have clear PTSD symptoms and issues coming up from this issue.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get that. You need to see a trauma counselor, because grief counseling and trauma counseling are two different things. Huh. That totally makes sense. And so I started this journey to address that more. And it really feels like things are just really kind of starting to swirl and come into place for me to really start to devote way more time and effort into this. Because, I mean, one of my board members started working part-time for the United Way. And she said she gets calls all the time of someone who goes into the hospital with COVID and they're not allowed in.
Yeah.
No visitors whatsoever. For X amount of, whatever the hospital determines is their quarantine days. They had changed it from 10 to 5, most hospitals, but even that sometimes is still 10 or more. And so it's still going on. It's still a problem. And we need to get back to the way it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I just thank you for the efforts that you're doing and all the work. This is something that's going to benefit so many people. I'll make sure to put the contact information, the URL and everything in the show notes.
Thank you.
Any last words of encouragement for those that are listening? Because sometimes, you know, entrepreneurship can be complicated and complex, you know, but personal life can get complex as well. Any last words to encourage entrepreneurs or maybe not the same scenario, but struggling between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that you can share?
Take care of your health.
Mm.
Take care of your health. Not just your physical health. And physical health is very important. Don't discount. Don't get me wrong. Physical health is very important, because the healthier, the better nutrients you have going through your body, the better it's working, the more clearly you can think, and the more clearly you can balance life, really.
Mm-hmm.
But also be sure to take care of your mental health as well as your emotional and spiritual health. You got to take care of your heart, take care of your head, and take care of this whole body, because if it's working right, life just seems to, troubles don't seem to hit me as hard.
Yeah.
When a curveball hits, it gets thrown. It doesn't knock me sideways. I don't fall back and think it's going for my head. Instead, I stay in there and I wait for that ball to curve and then try and take it out of the yard.
Mm-hmm. And it's not selfish either to take time for yourself, care of yourself. Because sometimes people think it's selfish. I can't really think about myself right now because I have other people to think about.
This altruistic, you know, love your neighbor idea throughout the Christian faith of loving others, do unto others, love everyone. That's great. But Jesus said the two greatest commandments in the Bible are love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Well, in that, I've never heard a pastor once say, do you love yourself? Do you really love yourself? Are you really taking care of yourself? Because if you're not taking care of yourself, and I had this conversation with Elizabeth one time, I said, I'm going on this hike today because I need to recharge my battery. So that way, when I come home, I'm more emotionally available for you guys. And I'm much more present with you guys. That we need to be carving out time to take care of ourselves. So that way, out of that overflow and that abundance, it's way easier to take care of our families and take care of our employees or our contractors, our business, those around us, our friends, our family.
Absolutely. Those kinds of things.
And so my suggestion is to everyone, take care of your body, take care of your mind, and be sure to take care of your heart.
Yes, you have permission to take care of yourself.
Yeah,
for sure. Steve, my friend, thank you so much. I just really appreciate you just being so candid and authentic and sharing your story. I know it's probably still difficult to do that, but you're doing it for the sake of others. And I'm glad that you're getting some help too, so you can maintain your health, both physically, mentally, spiritually. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Marissa.
All right. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you'd like to be part of the Amplify Your Authority podcast community, I would be thrilled. Not only do you get the Monday Marketing Memo, quick reads to help you start the week, but you also receive each new episode in your inbox with all the links, all the show notes, and all the content upgrades. You'll also have an opportunity to submit your copy for critique live on LinkedIn when we record the podcast. Or if you'd like to be a guest, there'll also be information on how you can do that. Thanks so much. Hope to see you inside the community.